You are listening to a Hillbilly Horror Stories classic episode.
This podcast is part of the Podbelly Network. Please visit podbelly.com to see a complete listing of all of our other shows.
It's about to be a fun ride. Follow along, watch as we slide. Paranormal just hit the lights. Goosebumps all through the night. Mix in just a little bit of twang. That girl sure can't do a thing. Together, hillbillies go insane. Laugh so hard it'll hurt your brain. Podcast you won't ever change. These two here, they got the recipe. Sat on back and listen in to some of our darkest mysteries, ain't?
Welcome to Hillbilly Horror Stories. And now here's your host, Jerry and Tracy Polly, and their dog Ninja.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 183 of Hillbilly Horror Stories. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Tracy.
And we got a cool story for you tonight. This will probably be one of the coolest stories that you've never heard of.
Oh, well, that's refreshing.
Because, I mean, it was a really popular story back in the late 60s, but mm-hmm. then it's something that nobody ever talks about. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure somebody's probably covered it, but it's not something that I've ever seen covered. So I'm sure it's out there, but that if I haven't seen it,
yeah.
with as many paranormal podcasts as I listen to, then it's, you know, probably not been covered very often.
So. Okay, well, I'm excited.
Obviously, we want to start off by thanking all of our military and civil servants all over the world, no matter which country you represent. Thank you, guys, gals, and canines.
Especially you firefighters that's been out there fighting those fires. God bless you all. I can't even imagine your state of mind, how exhausted you are. But we are so grateful for you all. And I know Australia is very grateful.
And that is especially goes out to the families of the American firefighters yeah. that were killed earlier this week.
Yeah, this is just so sad. But we keep you in our prayers every day. Thank you for protecting us, keeping us safe, and you guys stay safe as well.
If you're going through a hard time and you need somebody to talk to, please do not be afraid to reach out to somebody. Don't feel humiliated to reach out to somebody. Don't feel like you're a burden to somebody. And I'm going to add to that this week because there was a post, and I'm not criticizing the post. It just made me think of how many of us don't think about the people that are in need. And the post that was in our group was basically complaining that it's tough to do their job because a coworker is going through a divorce and she's struggling and she goes home for lunch every day. So nobody really gets a chance to talk to her, but she's not showing up for work like she should and all that. And there was frustration. And trust me, I know how that goes to have coworkers that aren't pulling their own weight. Mm-hmm. And that's basically all it was saying is this coworker is not pulling their own weight. And, you know, they know she's going through some stuff, but basically, she needs to get her stuff together. And my response to that was, okay, I'm hearing how much of an aggravation she is, and I'm hearing that everybody knows she's going through trouble, but I'm not hearing anybody say, we've reached out to her to say, what can we do to help?
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, that's an issue just because I think a lot of people think that way. They know somebody's going through something. But the immediate response is how it affects me, not what that person's actually going through. And as I responded, you know, when I was going through my divorce, I was devastated. I couldn't give a damn about work. I mean, I quit the job I was in because it was a commission only job, and I couldn't focus on what I was doing. So I literally walked away from that job and got something that was, you know, more of a guaranteed pay because my head wasn't in the game. And I guarantee I was a horrible coworker back then at that moment, but I didn't care. I mean, I was going through something devastating to the point where I ended up attempting suicide. And that was my question to them is if this person did something to harm themselves, everybody in that place would be thinking, oh, I wonder if there was something I could have done to help. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something you could do to help. If you know somebody's struggling, reach out to them. Don't wait for them to reach out to you.
Yeah. Or what, like you just said, it's too late.
Yeah. It'd be too late. So that's all I'm saying is if you know somebody's struggling, don't wait for them. Reach out to them. See what you can do to help them.
Yes, absolutely. Please do that.
And if you need to reach out to somebody other than us or the group, You can always dial 1-800-273-8255 in the United States, or you can text 741-741. Okay, let's get into the story.
All right.
Are you familiar with who Elkie Summer is?
Yeah.
I originally heard this story years ago, and to be honest with you, I completely forgot about it. So unless you're over 50, you probably have no clue who Elkie Summer is. So we won't get into a ton about her, but just so you'll have a little bit of background on her, if you're not familiar with her, she was a beautiful blonde actress originally from Yugoslavia, and she was really popular during the 60s through about the end of the 70s. She was married to a gentleman by the name of Joe Hyams, who was a pretty well-known Hollywood columnist, an author, an actor. He wrote a bunch of books, really popular books, including Brubaker, which was made into a movie with Robert Redford.
Redford, yeah. Yep.
And then he also wrote Quincy, M.E.
Quincy, the doctor?
Yeah, it was he wrote the book and that they made the TV series with Jack Klugman about.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Elkie was in movies that were pretty big hits, like A Shot in the Dark, which with Peter Sellers, that was the very first Pink Panther movie before they started calling him Pink Panther. But that was the first movie that had Inspector Clouseau in it.
Yeah, and then Ozzy Osbourne made a song about it. No, I know it's the same thing, but
she's also in Boy, Did I Get a Wrong Number with Bob Hope and The Art of Love, which had Dick Van Dyke and James Garner in it. Mm-hmm. So that's just some of the hits. She had a lot more hits than that, but that was some of the big ones. So Elkie and Joe, they move into this home in L.A. in 1964. They thought it was their dream home. And how many times have we seen these dream homes turn into be nightmares?
Mm-hmm.
On July 6th, a German journalist by the name of Edith Dahlfield, she actually came to the house to do a story on Elkie because, of course, Yugoslavia, Germany, and all that was over kind of in the same vicinity. And since she was making it big in America, she had a lot of fans over in Germany.
Yeah.
So this columnist comes over. So they're sitting in the living room, and Edith, the columnist, she looks up and she sees this really large man, about 50 years old. He was wearing dark pants, a white shirt, and a black tie. He had this really big potato-shaped nose, is how she would later describe it. His hair was really thinning up on top. So she asked Elkie if she's going to introduce her to this man.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Elkie wasn't facing that way, so she didn't see anybody. She assumes that she meant her husband, Joe, because to the best of her knowledge, there was nobody else in the house other than them two and possibly Joe. So she gets up and she goes looking around for her husband, but she doesn't see him anywhere, which she thought was funny anyway, because the guy that the columnist described definitely didn't fit the description of her husband.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, either way. So a few weeks later, Elkie's mother is visiting from Yugoslavia, and she was staying in the downstairs bedroom. And you're going to hear this downstairs bedroom gets a lot of play throughout this story. So one morning, she was just starting to wake up. She was still a little bit out of it, and she saw a strange man staring at her. It pretty much jolted her straight awake.
Mm-hmm.
And just as she started to scream, the man vanished. So Joe comes down, her father-in-law. He doesn't believe in ghosts at this point.
Yeah.
And he says, I think you must have maybe saw a prowler or something like that.
Okay, that don't make it any better.
Staring through the window.
Oh, that's not reassuring.
Or maybe a peeping Tom or something like that.
Yeah.
But logically, that's what it could have been because he knows nobody else was in the house.
Yeah.
And there's a window,
you know,
other than maybe a dream. That's the only thing he can think that it could be. He goes outside and he looks for footprints underneath the window. He didn't see any, which the ground was extremely soft because it had rained the night before. So if someone had been out there definitely would have been footprints, but there were none. So right after this, they start asking her what the guy looked like. She gives an almost exact description.
Oh, the potato nose guy?
The potato nose, the black tie, the white shirt, the dark pants, heavy set. She gives almost the same thing. Now, right after all this, that's when poltergeist activity started. So Joe and Elkie were upstairs in their bedroom relaxing. They hear a commotion down in the dining room. It sounded like all of the chairs were moving around. And Joe said it sounded like if you'd ever been to a big dinner party and everybody was finished, you know, with their food, and they were getting up, everybody scoots their chairs out at the exact same time. That's what it sounded like. Because apparently, I don't know how many chairs and stuff they had, but I can imagine it was a formal dining room.
Yeah.
And it probably had at least 12 to 16 chairs, mm-hmm, I would think. Mm-hmm. So Joel was always looking for a logical explanation on things. And he decided that it must be tree limbs brushing against the outside of the house near the dining room. That's what would make sense to him. So he called some people to come out and have the trees pruned. Well, Elkie felt like that the man that her mother and Edith saw was probably in the dining room making some kind of, you know, noise or something down there. But that's the way she felt. And she felt it was paranormal from the beginning. So Joe thinks it's something logical. She thinks it's, that we've already seen two men or two people seen
the
men
same guy
in this house.
Yeah.
So that must be what it is. So Joe felt like the women were seeing and hearing things, of course, freaking themselves out. So that changed, though, because Elkie and her mom went to Yugoslavia and left Joe all by himself.
Oh.
Elkie was actually making a movie over there, so in Yugoslavia, so she was going to be gone several weeks. And Joe eventually was going to leave and come visit her, but he had some stuff he had to take care of. So it was going to be a couple of weeks down the road before he can leave and actually go visit her in Yugoslavia. He said he never felt alone in the house. He always felt uncomfortable, and he constantly heard the chairs moving in the dining room, no matter what. This is after the trees and stuff had been pruned. On three straight days, he locked the window in the downstairs bedroom. Three straight days, he came downstairs and the window was not only unlocked, but wide open. He also heard the front door open and shut on several occasions, but every time he'd go down there to check it, he would find that the door was bolted from the inside.
Oh, dang.
So Joe was not going to be outsmarted by anyone or anything as far as he was concerned. So he went out and bought some microphones and he bought some tape recorders and then he set them up in all the places where he'd had these occurrences at. He also chalked the location of the chairs in the dining room, so if they moved, he would see they were out of place.
That's pretty smart.
The recorder that was outside didn't catch anything, so there were no prowlers sneaking in. That was the fact. He did start hearing something in the dining room, though. So he grabbed his gun. He quickly made his way downstairs. He got to the dining room and flipped the light on real quick, the light switch. The chairs hadn't moved, even though he knows he heard them. But the tape recorder did record the sounds and even a cough from upstairs beforehand, before he came down. It was his cough. But it recorded these chairs and stuff moving, even though they hadn't
been moving,
hadn't been physically moved. It also recorded even the light switch. When he flicked the light switch, you could hear that. And then the sound stopped as soon as the lights came on. To make matters worse, as soon as he got back up to bed, they started right back up again.
Now that's annoying.
Yeah. He was so shaken by this that he invited a friend to come stay with him for a little bit until he had to leave for Yugoslavia. This is a gentleman by the name of Gordon Mueller. Joe also asked him to stay in the house while he was gone and kind of house sit. Oh, and Joe conveniently forgot to tell him anything about the ghost stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy knows nothing. He comes in to stay. Joe gets to Yugoslavia. So he's left now. And by the time he gets there, there's already a letter from this Gordon Mueller waiting on him. The letter beat him there. Gordon said in the letter that there was a creepy feeling in the place. And that even when he went into the dining room, the hair stood up on the back of his neck.
Oh, man.
Also, he'd been sleeping in the downstairs bedroom, and he knows he locked the window, but the window was wide open the next morning when he woke up. He also heard a bunch of strange noises, so he moved upstairs to the master bedroom. Joe might not have told his friend that the place was haunted, but he didn't leave him high and dry. He actually had a private detective come and check on the place while he was gone.
Mm-hmm.
detective said he found the door and the window open, but no indication that anybody had been inside or had stolen anything. He also reported that one night at 2:30 a.m., he saw every light in the house on at the exact same time.
The detective said that?
Yeah. He said, the only thing I can think of is that Trace Adkins was in the house. I made that up.
I know you did.
Anyway, he said he saw lights on in the house, and he started to walk up to the house, and as soon as he got to the house, every one of them turned off. So we'll fast forward a little bit, and now they have returned from Yugoslavia. They're back home. The chair noises became a nightly occurrence. In 1965, Elke and Joe were living on the beach, and they had someone actually come into their house, the haunted house, that is, not the one on the beach, to clean the pool a few times.
Mm-hmm.
So one time, when the pool cleaner was there, Joe came to pick up the mail. And he asked Joe who was actually staying in the house. And Joe said, nobody. The pool cleaner said, well, that's what I thought. But last Tuesday afternoon, I saw a man in the dining room. A big man. About 6 foot. Heavy build. White shirt. Black tie. Sound familiar?
Oh, man.
He said, when I went to the door to see, you know, when you would be back, he disappeared. Just seemed to evaporate right in front of my eyes. So then there was an English writer who was a friend of Joe's, and he asked if he could spend the night, you know, a few nights at the house, rather, but he couldn't even make it past the first night. he was getting ready to climb into bed in the downstairs bedroom again. He felt like someone was watching him. So he turned around and he saw, his words, this big burly man in the doorway staring at him. The apparition walked down the hallway and disappeared. He said that he got out of the house as quick as possible and actually called Joe from a motel.
So basically, everybody's just seeing him, but the big burly guy's really not doing anything. But it's just, you know, that they're freaked out. Okay.
Correct. So one of Joe's screenwriter friends told Joe that he thought that someone was secretly living in their house. So they did a thorough check, but couldn't find any hiding places anywhere in the house. So we talked several times on this show about how animals can sense spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they had two dogs. These dogs would stand and look at the doorway to the dining room and bark excessively. One of these dogs would walk into a certain spot in the dining room and then walk out of the dining room as if it was following someone out of there. At this point, Joe reached out to a friend at UCLA, who was actually a psychologist. And she actually put them in touch with the American Society for Psychical Research and Thelma Moss. So the first step that the ASPR, as they will be known since then, because that's a lot of words to say, they took was to have Joe and Ellie fill out a checklist. Now, this checklist asked about what kind of apparitions, descriptions of the apparitions, and other data, stuff like that. Then they had several mediums come by to check out the place. These mediums were not told anything about the house. And believe it or not, there were over 30 mediums that came through this house.
Damn, that's a lot.
Most went to the same corner of the dining room and said there was something in that corner.
Ooh.
Even though they weren't there at the same time. And they weren't told anything.
Yeah.
They all started going the same thing. Also, when seances were performed, Joe and Elke were not allowed to be present.
Mm-hmm.
Because they didn't want there to be any kind of influence or anything like that. There were over 5 of these seances held in November of 1965. We're going to get into the seances, but first, there was a really well-known photographer who worked for Life magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Came out by the name of Alan Grant. And Alan said he'd been a photographer for over 30 years. He does not believe in ghosts. He said, but he took pictures in the dining room. And one time when he took the pictures, Joe was there. So Joe was in all these pictures. he said in the middle of the roll, because keep in mind this wasn't digital back then.
Yeah.
He said in the middle of the roll, there was five or six pictures that had progressively got worse with like a mist in the picture. He said the only time he had ever seen this was at the beginning of a roll, a film, to where maybe a little bit of light got to it or something like that. Mm-hmm. He said, but this was in the middle of the roll, and he had never seen that in his 30 years. He said, So did he believe in ghosts? Not really, but was something going on in there? Something was going on. And even Aoki, she said in later interviews that people couldn't take pictures of one certain corner. The picture wouldn't turn out. They could take pictures anywhere else, they'd be fine, but pictures in one certain corner wouldn't turn out. And as we said, several of these mediums all kept going to one corner of the house. So let's get into some of these seances. One of the mediums, Douglas Johnson, he said the dining room was haunted by a European. The description, heavyset, mustache, very fond of music. Oddly enough, that fit the description of Elke's father, who had recently passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he was from Europe. Lottie von Straw was another medium. She saw a man who was large, full of hate, and quite drunk, according to her. And she said untidy, which a lot of the descriptions that people were giving was he's kind of like a, he had the tie and stuff, but he was
like
kind
a slop kebab.
Dressed. Yeah. She said that the spirit was quite resentful that she was even there. Then you got Michael Hugh. He was one of the other seances. He decided to check out the swimming pool instead of the dining room, like everybody else was doing. He said he saw a blonde girl, 16 or 17 years old. He said she died in Europe 3 years ago of something with the lungs. And this was a shock to Elke because there was a girl that she knew before coming to America that actually had that situation.
Oh.
So he was actually seeing some. So this girl it's that
totally
she knew
different.
For some reason, yeah, but this girl was here and it fit the exact description and the cause of death and the time of somebody that Elke knew from back in Yugoslavia.
Wow, I wonder why she was there.
I don't know.
That's kind of weird.
It is. Fourth medium, Maxie Bell, she toured the house and stopped in the dining room. She said that the room was in turmoil. She saw a sloppy man in his 50s. She felt that he was a doctor. She said that he died at the age of 58 before he could finish something important with the man of the house. The last medium was Brenda Crenshaw. Now, Brenda said pretty much the same thing, even though the two mediums weren't there at the same time. She said that there was a 58-year-old doctor. Said he died of a chest or heart condition outside of the country. See, this once again, though, sounded a lot like Elke's dad. I think he apparently was a doctor. He was in his late 50s and he died out of the country of a heart problem. But Joe had a different notion. You see, the description fit perfectly to a doctor that he was writing a book with who died suddenly before the book was finished. So that would fit with doctor dying and having an issue with the man of the house.
Well, I don't understand how Elke didn't realize that could be her dad with the description and stuff.
Well, there's a couple of different descriptions, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, you think that she even might put that together.
Well, I mean, she does start thinking that's her dad. As you'll see as we get in a little bit, she does think that that's her dad. So one of the mediums said that he had a feeling that this was going to be, there was going to be a fire in the dining room. And the owner was going to have to climb out of the second story bedroom to escape the fire. And he felt like that would be within the year. As far as the doctor, Joe tried to actually talk to him through some of these mediums, but he didn't have any kind of luck. So Joe figured that he and Elke couldn't have been the only people to have experienced things in his house. There had to be somebody else. So he checked with the previous owner and found out that they also had experiences, and that's why they moved from the home. The wife was hearing loud noises. from the dining room of all places, and she was alone when that happened. So she was actually upstairs in the bedroom, and she called a taxi from there. She locked herself in the room till the taxi pulled up in the driveway. So she said she kind of kept waiting for the taxi driver to come ring the doorbell, but he didn't. So she yelled at him from the bedroom window. And then, you know, he acknowledged her. She runs down the stairs and hopped in a taxi. And she asked the driver, why didn't you ring the bell? He said, well, I saw a man standing in the door, so I assumed that was my fare. So I didn't, you know, have any need to go to the door and ring the bell. And then you yelled at me out the window, and the man disappeared.
Oh, man.
In December, the ASPR, they sent one more medium out, Jacqueline Eastland, to the house. And Joe and Elke were gone during this time. She was positive that a man between 40 and 60 had been strangled to death in the home. She was actually afraid to go back into the home, therefore she didn't. One trip, and that was it. So Elke was scared to death. Joe wasn't, but he needed to put his wife's, you know, mind to rest, obviously, so he agreed to have the home exercised. Because of their racial orientation, they chose not to use a Roman Catholic priest or a Jewish rabbi. Instead, they chose to use the before-mentioned Lottie von Strahl because she was a mystic. So Lottie and Elke prayed in the dining room. Lottie referred to the entity as a horrible monster and said that it was standing right beside her. She commanded that it leave, Joe and Elke, in the name of Jesus Christ. She then said, he's leaving. So Joe and Elke were excited. They went to bed that night, ready for some sleep, and they had a peaceful feeling all around them. Joe locked all the doors and windows, of course. They went to bed. Shortly afterwards, though, Elke woke Joe up, and she said, listen, the dining room chairs were moving again.
Oh, man.
So at that time, Elke wasn't as scared, though, because she felt like this ghost was her father. Joe, on the other hand, said that he wasn't going to let a living man scare him out of his house, and he sure as hell wasn't going to let a dead one do it.
You go, Joe.
Now, here's my thoughts on this. I personally don't see how she could think that this was her dad when the previous owner had an experience with a similar situation.
Yeah, that don't add up.
Now, I understand that this might have some similarities to her dad, but something this just didn't seem right since there was already problems before then. Now, remember the medium who said she felt that there would be a fire within a year?
Yeah.
Well, that was published in the ASPR newsletter at the time that she said it. 8 months later, a fire broke out in the dining room. Elke and Joe had to escape by climbing out the second story bedroom window.
Whoa.
There's even a picture in the newspaper of them doing so, just as the medium predicted.
Oh, my gosh. There was a picture of them trying to escape?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a picture of them. You know, she's got long pigtails and all that stuff. They're up on the roof climbing down.
Oh, my goodness.
There's never a reason given for the fire, but firefighters did determine that it was started in the dining room, but they couldn't figure out why.
Oh, whoa.
Elke and Joe moved out of the house shortly after and sold it. Even though the home had a reputation already, because it had already been in Life magazine and all these other places, as being haunted, there was no shortage of takers. According to the interview with Elke that I saw years later, she said there were 17 different people who had lived in that house that had shortly after moved out.
After they moved out?
Yeah. Because this was years later.
Oh, yeah.
And she even told one story. I think this might have been the people who got it immediately after. Mm-hmm. She said they changed the chandelier. She said they had a chandelier over their dining room, but these people changed it into this big elaborate chandelier. And they were having a party on Halloween. And they were laughing and joking and, oh, the house is haunted and all this stuff. And they were at the table. And at that time, the chandelier fell onto the table and actually, I think, severed off somebody's finger or hand or something that was there, but it severed off a body part of one of the guests that was there at the table.
That is crazy.
So. anyways, that's the story of Elkie Summer and Joe Hyams.
Dang gone. They need to burn that house.
I don't know where the house is exactly. I just know
it was out in L.A. I mean, is it still standing inside?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I didn't look into what's happened to the house since, other than her saying there's been 17 people come and go.
Now, is she still alive?
Mm-hmm.
Elkie is still
Joe's not alive. Joe was about 10, 15 years older than her anyway.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but Joe died in, I think, 2003 or something like
really?
That. He's been dead for a while, but yeah, she's still alive.
Oh, my goodness. Well, she's got some stories she could tell, for sure.
Guarantee.
Oh, man.
So.
Yeah, that, I mean, with so many people seeing the same thing and all that stuff, yeah, I'd have been out there a long time ago.
So, yeah, it was, but how cool of a story is that?
It's a very cool story.
And there was a lot, I mean, that whole thing was documented by newspapers, mm-hmm. by, like I said, the American, Psychical Research. All of us been out there, and it's all in their newsletters, and so, I mean.
It's amazing.
And these are a lot of people that wouldn't put their careers on like
well,
back
no.
in the 60s, when you go screaming ghost, you know, you were looked at a lot different than
I'm sure you were. Yeah. That is incredible.
Tracy, would you like to tell us about our iTunes reviews for the week?
I surely would. We had a lot of nice reviews this week. Thank you guys so much.
I saw that Kevin Cummings left his 374th review.
Kevin, thank you so much. That really means a lot to us. I mean, it seriously does.
He updates his review literally like every couple of months.
I know. That's awesome. We love you for it. So, of course, Kay Cummings, Jody, 11925.
That's actually the pig from Amityville Horror. Thank you. I appreciate that. Jody the pig. You remember?
Oh, Yeah. I don't know. I don't remember that for some reason. Kenzie 23. That white boy with a fox body. Which, thank you for your 5-star review, sir. We appreciate that. And I am aware that I laugh pretty loud sometimes. And I'm really sorry I burst your eardrum. So I'm trying to be conscious of that.
But you're probably still listening to a lot of the older episodes because I think we fixed a lot of that moving forward with
yeah.
some of the programs we've used.
But thank you for your review, honey. We appreciate it.
Yeah, we moved on to Cackler Decaffeinated episode. And that's fixed a lot of the cat.
Oh, good. Oh, stop it. You've made that totally up, and I was totally buying what you were saying. Duh. Alton 109, JoJo Ping, Lavender Blue, Hyperbeats 8413, Two Customs, Josh Reagan, and DLO 86. Thank you guys for marvelous. I love reading all those reviews. It really makes my day. Keep them coming. And our Patreons this week was Amanda White and Leandra Braman. Thank you. What?
No, I was going to say, now, of course, that doesn't include
yeah.
all the people who did the Lifetime Patreon, and there were several of you out there. Thank you so much for all that.
Yes, thank you guys for so amazing. We're so blessed.
We basically still have another week left to be able to get in on that, and mm-hmm. It's been very exciting to see how many people have taken us up on that.
That
on
means that. The world to us. I'm glad you guys enjoy our show that much that you're willing to do that.
It seems
you
like
you guys are the best.
It seems like it's been going to be our, you know, forever before it gets here, but it's really not. The new shows, the live events start in April.
Dude, I can't even believe January's over. What the heck?
April 25th is Waverly, and I say Waverly because we're always going to go to Waverly, but it's the Louisville show. It's not a Waverly show. Don't need Tina Mattingly mad at me out at Waverly. But you know, we've already got a bunch of people bought tickets that night for the show, and we've got a bunch of people who have bought tickets for the Waverly tours already.
No, it's great. You guys are going to be so happy. It's so amazing.
Yeah, it's going to be so much fun. And I mean, Bishop Long is going to be at that one. You're mm-hmm. going to love him.
Yes.
The guys from Ohio, History Goes Bump.
Oh my gosh.
We're also going to have We Drink and We Know Things back.
Good.
For this one. So
perfect.
It's going to be a fun night and a fun day. Because that's an afternoon show. Most mm-hmm. of them we do aren't an afternoon, but this one's going to be a 2 o'clock afternoon.
Yeah. Well, we're excited to see you guys. We cannot wait.
But go to our website, and you can see all of the tickets are available for all the shows we got coming up. Gettysburg, Bobby Mackey's. What else we got? Charleston, Savannah, you name it. Indianapolis.
Gatlinburg.
Well, it's actually Pigeon Forge.
I mean, Pigeon Forge.
Similar. Well, it's not the same thing to people in Pigeon Forge. But, well, guys, thank you so much for everything you do. please leave us those reviews. It means so much to it and helps us move up the rankings. And I hope you guys are enjoying all the new shows that we're putting out, because this is the end of 2 weeks of them. And so far, so good. I haven't heard any complaints.
Yes, good. Y'all have a blessed week. We love y'all.